Now.
Hey guys, this is episode 13 of the Midcasters. I'm your co-host Jalen, and always joined by the amazing
Your favorite comic book and film reviewer, Craig.
awesome. And today we got some news, but we also got some things that are going to make you think a little bit today. But there was one specific topic that I was really wanting to dive into as soon as I read this article on The Hollywood Reporter about Blake Lively allegedly, while Justin Baldoni, the director of It Ends With Us, was in the hospital in June, did her own cut of the film, released it to a special screening for fans or whatever. And it is not known if the actual cut was hers or his that was released to audiences worldwide. But I personally think that with her false accusations that had no merit, that were investigated, of him allegedly fat shaming her and kissing her that lingered a little bit too long, I think he has merit to sue her for defamation and for bulldozing of a project that he owns the rights to. But Craig, what are your thoughts on these allegations and Blake Lively?
I haven't seen too much of her stuff aside from The Shallows is the only film I've seen of hers that I like just because I love sharks.
That is
And
my favorite.
I love survival films, but I didn't even know this was a whole thing until I saw that video that you sent me, and I was like, oh shit.
Yes, and allegedly, Ryan Reynolds, well, not allegedly, Blake Lively literally said it out front, for everybody to hear that Ryan Reynolds helped write the rooftop scene and I guess some other scenes in the film, which would mean that he was writing during the strike to me. Just time-wise, something's not adding up. And it just seems like he was bulldozing. She had these, well, I guess there was like an internal investigation into the claims that he fat shamed her, that he kissed her a little too long. But there was just no merit or evidence to support those claims. And I honestly think that she wanted to take over directing and took advantage of the fact that he was in the hospital. I don't remember what he was in the hospital for, but she took over it. Unknown if she released her cut or if it was his cut that was released, but it still just doesn't sit well with me that she's using this film to promote everything but what the film is about.
Isn't the film based on a book?
It is based on a book, but the author is already problematic herself, just with allegations from her personal life, with her family, all alleged, of course. It like glamorizes domestic violence, essentially, the book is from what I have understood. And then Blake Lively just piggybacks off that because I don't think she has any type of depth to her. And there was like a comment in an interview, I don't remember which premiere, but she said, "You can't just put me in any role and give me words." It's like, so you can't act, is what you're saying. I mean, a lot of like then like things will like things have been coming out about her shady past, her shady behaviors, her glamorizing the slavery period with her blog that she had. It's just like, ooh, this woman is not a good person. She is a mean girl who tried to steal a movie from a man who owns the rights to it. So honestly, I think he should sue her for defamation and I don't know what you would call it since she kind of did her own cut of the film, even though she's technically an executive producer and not the producer because the producer is responsible for like the financing, whereas executive producer is like the creative freedom person.
Right, like hell, I thought the J.K. Rowling situation was bad.
It's like the more that you've seen, like about, because I already knew she had a shady history, and I never really wanted to read her books just because I have a hard time focusing, and that she's a very problematic person, allegedly. But I mean, yeah, it just kind of leads to the question, the importance of representation in films and shows, and having being a voice for the people who aren't in films, you know what I mean, that don't have a platform, that don't come out, don't speak out. And it just led to the question, what shows or films made you feel seen or represented, or that you really felt like the filmmakers and the actors put effort into making sure there was representation, awareness, and advocacy for like certain issues? Like, I think for me, like, there was a really good example. I know it's probably not like there's a billion examples, but in Moon Knight, the character, he has multiple personality disorders, and he did that all as like a protective method because of his mom's abuse, which I felt was really carefully done and done with a lot of heart and just compassion for like the subject. But what do you think about that? And do you care if maybe they speak out like during press and stuff like that for films and shows?
One thing I really love about certain films and TV shows is how they display mental health, because I think that's very important, because, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it's something that no one really talked about. And a lot of people would be like, oh, I don't need a shrink. I don't, there's nothing wrong with me. But nowadays, it's some people are 50-50 on therapists. Some people don't like, I understand why people don't think they need it. However, I do think talking about those type of issues does kind of lift the weight off your shoulders if you feel like you can't talk about it with anyone else. Like Iron Man 3, I used to hate that film. Like that was like one of the very first superhero movies I saw where I was disappointed by. But look, going back on it, and like watching all these YouTubers go through this journey of watching the MCU in order, I've gotten a much more appreciation for the film and how they handled Tony's PTSD, especially, and his anxiety after the events of New York. And I thought it was excellently done, and also they still kind of play with that idea after Iron Man 3, like in Civil War. I don't know if you remember this, the woman that approached him about her son dying, when she reached in his purse, he thought that she was going to pull out a gun or something, and he grabbed her by her wrist.
That was a good part. One that always stuck out to me is Law and Order SVU, and how big of an advocate of Mariska Hargitay is for every victim out there. Like, even a child that was having an issue with, I don't remember the situation, but she ran up to her thinking that was Olivia Benson. And of course she helps her because she's just an amazing woman. And I just always appreciated how that show, I mean, it's gone on way too long, but that they, like, even the actor is like a big advocate for it. Or even Grey's Anatomy, after every episode that had like a certain issue, like domestic violence, for example, where one of the actors' characters ran away from their husband and he comes back, and I felt like it was really portrayed very well, and they handle a lot of things in that show with care. And I feel like I want to see more actors speak out on certain issues, because you have a platform, and not a lot of people do that with their platform. Like, Blake Lively had an opportunity to raise money, to raise awareness, to do all these things for domestic violence. And it's just like absent. And it's just like, what are we doing with our platforms if you're not going to use it for good?
Right. I completely get that. I think When it comes to that, I think that like domestic violence, I think I'm not sure if you've seen it, but Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss, that was done beautifully. That's one of my favorite movies. I love how they like him and like the girl's boyfriend and brother gaslighted her throughout the entire movie to think she was crazy, and that it like even the beginning of the movie, it says a lot without saying nothing. Like she feels like a prisoner in her own home, and I think we need more movies and TV shows that tackle ideas like that, because I think it's important to do it in a way that's not crossing boundaries.
Do you care if the actors, when they do like press tours and stuff like that for the films or shows, does it matter to you if they speak out about those issues that are present in the film? Like they're very big advocates that don't like look like they're faking it, that they're being genuine about it.
I think it's very essential to tackle those subjects, especially if that's what the, even if it's not a huge element in the film, if it's something that the character struggles with, then I think it is important to talk about those type of issues, because a lot of people watching the film or that are going to see the film or watching your TV series could feel exactly what your character's feeling, whether it's a physical illness or being in an abusive relationship or having anxiety or anything like that.
Yeah, just making sure that there is a very genuine presence and that it's not like something that's forgotten about and moved on.
Right.
But we're going to move on to some lighter news. Margot Robbie is set to work with Colin Farrell on a film called A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, set to release May 9th, 2025, aka Mother's Day weekend. The plot details are very scarce, but according to The Hollywood Reporter, the movie is said to be centered around two strangers and the unlikely way their paths align. And honestly, I'm excited for it because I feel like Margot Robbie and her husband, even because they work together, he's a producer, she's a producer, they have a really good ability to work well together and just put really banger films out, even if she's not like attached to star in the film.
I was not expecting those two to work together. That would have been the last thing that I expected.
It's
But
fun to see them work together because I feel like they're both very talented individuals.
I would like more details. I have a feeling that this is going to be probably a romantic drama, but I'm gonna have to need more plot details. However, I will be seated. I'll probably take my mom to see that.
Anything for Margot Robbie. I mean, she's like the mastermind behind A Promising Woman, a Promising Young Woman, and then Saltburn, which we all definitely know. But it kind of like begs the question, what do you want to see her like do next? Not including this movie or the Ocean's prequel that she's doing with Ryan. I mean, I want to see her direct and I want to see her do maybe a horror film, like a true horror film.
That's exactly what I was thinking when you sent the bullet points for the podcast. I was thinking either horror or thriller, because she usually does drama and comedy, but I would like to see her do a horror or a thriller film.
I want to see her do a limited series because I know she's done, what's it called, Pan Am series on ABC, that short-lived series. I feel like she would really kill it, like in a show, maybe like a True Detective type of show, just to kind of show more. I mean, we obviously see her in dramas, but I think it would probably be like an interesting take to see her like as a true detective. I don't know how, like what story they would write, but I feel like it'd be really cool.
I think she's one of the few that can do well with any kind of material that you give her. I think that her best work comes from behind the camera. I feel like when she's in charge of the production, that's when she gets the best work, even if she's not directly a lead in the film.
I agree with you. I think she did really well with behind the scenes for I, Tonya. Probably one of her best performances, right next to Babylon. I
Should
just
have won an
think
Oscar for I, Tonya.
Babylon and Babylon. She should have like three or four Oscars by now, but we're not getting into that with the Academy because I could go on for days about that. Her Oscar will come one day. But let's move on to another subject that we have. James Gunn has talked about pre-production and the importance of pre-production, so that way they're limiting reshoots. And do you think this will lead to the success of the DCU and have like a cohesive like theme for every project that they do, as compared to Marvel, which we know they don't even know the word what pre-production means because they're reshooting all the time.
Hell, the less, the better. James Gunn, I have the utmost faith in him in the DCEU. I love that he utilizes lesser known characters because there are some people that from the movie slate that he's using, I never heard of from the comics. And I'm excited to see where he's going to go with said characters. And I like how he said that he does not cast actors or announce a movie. He doesn't cast actors until the script is finished.
Yes, there was a quote he had said or taken by Variety that James Gunn likes to avoid reshoots by not filming until he has a finished script. And he also said that he has done one day of filming. He did, I'm sorry, he has done one day of filming of reshoots total in his past two films. So
That
that would be Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and then the last Suicide Squad, which I think is genius. And I think it's just important to have a lot of things figured out so you're not going back and reshooting them to like fix the story. I'm like, why are we doing all this when you couldn't have figured, like it's just like the perfect example would probably be like Captain America 4. I'm like, why are we doing reshoots it now? Like you're fixing the
Yeah.
story when you should have figured this out to begin with. Like, I don't know, five rewrites.
Yeah, that's way too many.
It's just insane, and it's just like it shows with Marvel and leading to the question is why can't Marvel over prepare? If they're going on retreats and doing planning for the next 10 years, well, then they need to be over preparing and not start shooting until their script is finished.
Right.
And he goes, this is his four, I guess, or I guess his six tips. Over prepare, don't start shooting until you finish the script that the whole team is happy with. Hire actors and the department heads I know can do their jobs. Surround yourselves with people that will challenge you, not just a yes, sir type of attitude. Ask yourself daily, are there small imperfections in the script? Or what we're shooting might end up feeling like a huge imperfection when we cut the film together. And then he did. Number six was one and two.
That
Repeat one and two.
I like that list.
I do too. And it makes me feel even more calm. I'm not a fan of the first two Guardians films, but I really enjoyed the third one when I was not expecting to like it whatsoever. I had a preconceived notion that I was going to hate it. And I didn't. I actually really enjoyed it. Did I cry when Rocket was being Rocket? No, I didn't cry. But it's still like a good film, and it felt like a lot of. He's probably like the only filmmaker in Marvel that has given his characters like a complete arc. I will stand until the day I die that Nebula has the best story arc in the MCU.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yes. It just like made me like reflect on it. I'm glad I rewatched the second Suicide Squad. I know I'm not a big fan of his past behaviors just because they're very problematic, but I'm gonna try to have an optimistic mind. As long as he keeps Shawn Levy and The Rock away from DC, I'll be Gucci.
Yeah, because God, Rock just
That man went to take over.
only thing Rock is good at is well, as he would say, laying the smack down on people's asses.
He wasn't even a good wrestler. I've said what I've said. I've said
Not I think he made up for it for his talking.
I feel like Dave Bautista has done a better job out of the WWE, like transitioning into acting.
Oh my God, Dave Bautista is the best wrestler turned actor.
I don't remember the phrase he said, but he was like, I don't want to be pigeonholed into like a specific role. Like how we've seen John Cena, because it's always like an action film. There's not like, you know what I mean, right? I feel like Dave Bautista is really showing his ability, and he wants people to take that chance on him. And even with the cabin in the woods, I mean, I didn't really enjoy the film, but I feel like he did a good job.
Yeah, like I will say, even though John Cena is not my, favorite actor, wrestler turned actor, I would put him above Dwayne just because of his comedy skills. And Peacemaker made me look at him differently because it did show that he is capable of having a dramatic performance.
Exactly. I want to see him do more serious roles, not action, like dramas. But that, I mean, it will be interesting to see what's going to happen in season two of Peacemaker. But let's move on to some other things that are going to make us think today. Pick an actor or a filmmaker and a genre you want to see them take on. It can like be like an actor that you want to see direct or produce. For me, I really want to see Scarlett Johansson take on like a whore, like an actual whore. I know I like whore is like our thing, but like I feel like she would kill it. I've seen her in Under the Skin. I've seen her in like a lot of things that I feel like she would just absolutely demolish it.
I did not know she has not done a horror.
I know. It just feels like she would have done a horror. I mean, like I feel like you can kind of consider Under the Skin like an elevated horror film, but not like a true scream one, like what we saw Elizabeth Olsen did, which I think is phenomenal. I want to see her do another horror film. I want to see her work with the okay. I have an idea for a film. I want to see them remake Sybil again, and it's in. If no one knows Sybil, it's based off a book. It is a made-for-TV movie, like back in the 70s, and it was I think it's like five parts. Essentially, follows this woman who has like multiple personality disorders. It's been since like debunked and that it's not real, but. If you watch it, you'll see what I say. Like, I think Scarlett could play Sybil, or she could play the doctor, and then Elizabeth Olsen, and vice versa. And I feel like they could play really well off each other with that. What's her name? Won an Emmy for it. And I believe it was remade in the early 2000s with Cate Blanchett. But I feel like something like that has the potential to be really cool.
I would have to look that up.
It like destroyed my mind. Like for my mental health, I can't watch that version again. I feel like it was kind of like not all over the place, but it could have been better. I mean, obviously it was done in the 70s, and the version I found was like the worst quality video you could possibly imagine, but I think it was pretty good.
God, oh, you know, I'd probably have to stick with the same genre. I would love to see Denzel do a horror.
Ooh, yes.
Like,
Like
I
as a
would,
killer or like a survivor.
as a survivor, I would love to see him in something with Jordan Peele. Like, we've seen him, Denzel has been, since he was very, very young, he's been a theater actor, and he's most of his work is drama, or drama action, or some sort of theater piece. But I would love to see him tackle a horror or a horror mystery type film. We kind of saw, what's the movie, Little Things, but that I think that's the name of the movie. Yeah, it was just so bad, and it's not because of him. It just felt like a ripoff of Seven, a bad ripoff of Seven.
I feel like it should be mandatory. Every actor should do a horror film.
I concur.
Jennifer Lawrence did one. Jennifer Aniston, I don't know if I consider the Leprechaun like a horror film, but like Jennifer Aniston did one. Elizabeth Olsen, if you haven't seen hers, oh my gosh, it's amazing. So many other actors should be doing horror films. Not elevated horror, like real horror.
That also had me thinking. I love to see Jenna Ortega do a rom-com. Like,
Oh
we
my
don't,
gosh, she needs it.
yeah, because we've only seen her do, she's known as one of the newer screen queens, and that's great. I would consider her on my list of screen queens, but I would love to see her actually do something humorous and
I need
romantic.
Elizabeth Olsen to do that too. And Evan Peters. Evan Peters needs a break.
Elizabeth
My
Olsen,
gosh.
I'd like to see her in more drama films, like after that TV series she did with what's his name, Jesse.
No, I know what that show was so freaking good. And I love that she's willing to do series. Like she even did that Sorry for Your Loss series on Facebook, which I've yet to seen, which I didn't even know Facebook shows, but that was a 3-season show. And it's just like I love actors that are doing stuff like that you wouldn't even think of.
They are taking a big risk by doing that.
I'm excited for her upcoming films. I know I saw a short list from Variety that she could be nominated for her role in His Three Daughters, which I hope is true, because Natasha Lyonne and then Carrie Coon. Carrie Coon, is that her name? I think that's her name. They're like sisters in a Netflix movie. Netflix better not let them down because I'll be upset.
I cannot take Netflix
Hey, Fair Play is a good film, and they missed their opportunity to market that for an Oscar. But let's move on to this other question to make you think. What's an actor who's moved to directing that you feel has done a really good job, but can still do both acting and directing?
films. Definitely, after watching Michael B. Jordan, he did an excellent job with Creed 3. And just by watching it, you could tell that he's an anime nerd. And I would like to see him do more direct more films, like maybe like a theater piece. I would like to see him do like a theater piece because I haven't seen that out of him yet, and I want to see if he's capable of doing that.
I think for me, I'm gonna do Greta Gerwig. I mean, obviously she works well with her husband Noah, who's written amazing films that she's been in, but I think she still can do both. And I wanna see her direct so many more things. I know Scarlett Johansson has her directorial debut that may release next year. I definitely want to see her direct more. I think she would kill it, like directing a Marvel movie, but that's just my opinion on that.
Oh, and God, I no, Scarlett Johansson, Tom Cruise, he usually produces a lot of his stuff, but I would like to see him and Scarlett work together on something because he did say that he's always wanted to work with Scarlett and.
And she said it too. I think there's something in the pipelines. It is alleged that they're doing a remake of some Clint Eastwood film, though. A rumor.
Yeah, I would like to see them do a like a romantic drama because I have not seen Tom Cruise do any non-action film since
Jerry Maguire.
American Made, probably.
That might.
And
I think he needs to do more. I think we got to get away from the Mission Impossible movies.
yeah,
Sorry,
because
Tom, but you got
yeah, the next one hopefully will be the last one. And
to.
I don't know if it's just me, but I absolutely hate when they split, when they say this is the end of a franchise and they split it into two films.
Well, sometimes there's just too much material, which I definitely understand. But Tom Cruise, make it work. Give us a drama. Give us another drama like Jerry Maguire. Show me the money.
God, and now that has me thinking, is there I think Spike Lee I know Spike Lee's doing like a remake of like a thriller film, like a thriller suspense film with Denzel. I don't exactly know what the remake is or what it's about, but maybe I'd like to see him do. I don't think he's done a comedy.
I don't know. Another one I really liked is like Mel Gibson. I know he's very problematic, but I really like how I really loved Hacksaw Ridge. I know. But he was really good at directing it, but he's also a really good actor. I love The Patriot, and I will stand by that. Because that's a good movie.
The only reason I like Hacksaw Ridge is because of Andrew
Andrew.
Garfield.
I think he did really well and I just loved the representation in that film. But let's do a director spotlight. Who's a director that works have resonated with you? And what's your favorite and your least favorite film of theirs?
Jeez, whew. Definitely Spike Lee, Ryan Coogler, and Jordan Peele. As far as the least favorite stuff, I'd throw Nolan in there. I'm sorry, Nolan fans, but my least favorite Nolan film is probably, Oppenheimer.
Wasn't expecting that. You know, that's valid. That's really valid.
And it's just the math and the science shit was hurting my head.
It's valid because there's been so many documentaries on it, and there was a documentary release that he narrated or something, or he did before Oppenheimer was released. But I'm like a huge history buff.
I was just like, just get to the bomb.
Oh my gosh. And everybody's expecting it to be loud, but it's silent.
Right.
But it was so cool that he made like a miniature practical atomic bomb. That's what, like, I was like, bro, that's just insane.
And I was more excited about the I like the fallout of the bomb better than leading up to it. And Ryan Coogler, my least favorite is probably Wakanda Forever. Just because I've only seen it once since it's been out. It's just too emotional to go back and watch, especially after Chadwick. I personally think that they should have recasted him just because even his brother said that he thinks that they should have recast the Black Panther because his brother wouldn't have wanted that.
I agree with you on that. One that I wanted to pick a director that was really hard for me to pick a least favorite, Damien Chazelle. I love all of his films. I think my least favorite is A First Man, just because I feel like we didn't get enough out of Ryan Gosling performance. Just feel like he didn't give me that gripping, that thrilling moment that was like, man, this man is like a star. I mean, obviously we know he's a star, but like, you know what I mean? Like that moment there, you're like, man, this man is like ripping this film to shreds. Claire Foy gave me that, which I loved her in that film. And it could have been a potential for Ryan to win an Oscar for it. I just feel like there was not like that monologue, that moment that stuck out to me. My favorite film of his, it was Whiplash, just because I was just so mind blown by the film and just left speechless after watching it. Babylon is another amazing film. It's a big F you to Hollywood, and it is chaotic from beginning to end, and I don't think there's a dull moment in that single film. I probably have to go with La La Land just because that one sticks out to me the most. It has the most memories, the moments that just like make me like, oh, this movie's tearing me apart. Why don't they end up together? The music, just everything about that film sticks out to me.
I might have to go see the film when they re-release it in theaters next month because Brandon, I didn't know that they were re-releasing it until Brandon made a video about it, and that's one of his favorite films. That's one of my,
Whiplash.
yes.
I love
That's
when he works with that score with the music person, Justin Hartwitz. I always butcher his last name, but I just feel like, man, those two are like a dynamic duo.
The Caravan song, I'm actually learning that right now on keyboard. My freaking hand was cramping up, and last night I was like, okay, I gotta stop.
His music's just so good. It's so compelling. It's gripping. It really adds to the film. And I feel like that's what First Man didn't get me. Like, it's a good story, right? About Neil Armstrong, him getting to the moon. I feel like it's a really good, accurate representation of just getting to the moon in general. But I just feel like, just that film didn't give me what I wanted it to give me. I don't hate it, but I don't love it.
Yeah. Oh, and Martin Scorsese as well. I love Martin Scorsese. And this might be unexpected, but my favorite of his actually isn't Goodfellas, but it's actually Casino. I feel like that one's very underrated and that one doesn't get talked about enough. I love Casino. And as far as my least favorite, it has definitely got to be The Irishman. I mean, by God, the visual effects were absolutely terrible. You're
It
gonna
was
tell me
reckless.
3.5 hours long, and usually time does not bother me on a film as long as the pacing is good and the story is good. However, it felt like it was 3.5 hours long. It felt like 8. I mean, God, trying to convince the audience that a 70-year-old Joe Pesci, actually, they're like 80 now. Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro, and Al Pacino are in their 40s is absolutely hilarious to me because yeah, they could have just used young actors, but they were like, eh, let's save money. Visual effects it is. You can't tell a 80-year-old man to stand up out of a chair like he's in his 40s again.
I don't really like Martin Scorsese's work. I know that's like probably an unpopular opinion. Like they're good. Like I love Goodfellas, but like his films aren't like I'm gonna die for that he's the best filmmaker to ever exist. Like people build him up to be. He's a cool dude, like outside of the film. I really don't like Inception just because a dream within a dream within a dream. Like, no, no. It's just too much going on in that movie. Like Shutter Island's freaking phenomenal. I didn't really enjoy The Departed. I don't think he knows any other actors besides Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro, or DiCaprio.
Usually when you're friends with certain actors, then you'll recycle them. Like, I think like the best director-actor relationships, in my opinion, are like Nia DaCosta, Tiana Paris, Greta Gerwig.
Greta and Saoirse Ronan. They're pretty good there.
Spike Lee, Denzel, Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan.
Relationships. Those just don't stick out to me, though. I've tried. I'm not like, I don't remember that one film. Someone's Not Here Anymore. I can't remember the name of the film. That's a good Scorsese film because it doesn't feel like a Scorsese film. Goodfellas is really good, but I mean, Shutter Island's pretty good. I had to rewatch like the end of it. Like, wait, hold up, what just happened now? I feel like everybody had that moment with Shutter Island.
I have yet to see that film. I didn't even know that. I heard a lot of people are kind of mixed on that film.
I do see the conflictions in it, and. Yeah, I see the complexions. But I do want to see Scorsese work with Mark Ruffalo again. I feel like he got the best. It's just a really good performance with both of them and just really good chemistry. And I want to see them work together again. I'm surprised they haven't. But Wolf of Wall Street's good. But, oh my Lord, they're so long.
Yeah, I mean, once you get past the drugs, the alcohol, the essay, the cheating.
all of it. Just yeah. All of it. He's a good part. Like, I love his just him outside of film and stuff like that. But please tell him to make a film under 2 hours long.
I completely understand what you mean. Like,
Killers of the Flower Moon was lingering. I was like, is this over yet?
Right.
But it's a beautiful film.
And I think that, God, what was it? For the longest, I didn't even know that Shutter Island was his film until you said it. But
I love that film.
I'll have to add that to my list. I don't know what streaming service it's on. It might be on Hulu or
I thought it was on Netflix. But it's like a film you have to pay attention to. Like, don't like look away. And I think that's why I love that film. Is that like every moment you have to pay attention.
And with you know, a lot of women say that I've talked about this in a video before. A lot of women say that liking Wolf of Wall Street is a red flag. I can understand where they're coming from. I don't necessarily think liking the film's a red flag. However, I do think that if you come out of that film as a man and you're like, you know what? I want to be like Jordan Belfort.
I get that problem. I don't think it's a red flag. I mean, I would think it's a red flag if you like The Godfather. Just kidding, guys. Just kidding. Just kidding.
I haven't seen any of those films.
I haven't. I have no desire to ever watch them.
I do think if you want to be like Jordan Belfort after watching The Wolf of Wall Street, you are a red flag. I don't think liking the movie is a red flag, but if you want to be like the main character, despite the film showing how shitty he is, then maybe you should, rewatch that film again.
I was like, get checked. Go watch it with your mom or something. But let's end this episode on another question to make y'all think. We're going to do a film spotlight. What is your favorite film of the year so far? And what has stuck out most to you about it?
I'll let you go first.
I'm going to say Dune Part 2 for the fact that I did not, when I first watched the first one, when it came out on streaming, I found it boring. I found it exhausting. I found it like just very bland. And I fell asleep actually. And then I watched it again. I didn't like it. But then, what was it? Something, I saw a trailer for the second one. And I don't remember which trailer it was, or like a little snippet from it. And I'm like, okay, let me rewatch the first one again, because I'm going to go see the second one for Florence Pugh, because I love Florence Pugh, Austin Butler. And I'm like, wait a minute, the first one's actually really, really good. And then the second one, I'm like, this might be the best sci-fi film ever made. This might be better than Empire Strikes Back. In fact, I think it is. And it's just, the performance from Austin Butler stuck out to me. Zendaya is good, but she doesn't stick out to me. She doesn't like stay in my brain after I've left the film. I feel like the standouts for me are Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Rebecca Ferguson even. It's just like, not even Timothée Chalamet stuck out for me. Like, their performances in the limited time that they were there just really stuck in my mind and resonated with me. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy Zendaya. I just don't feel like she resonated with me the way that I thought she would have. And it's a close second with The Challengers, because I feel like each actor in that movie doesn't take a back seat. They're not a supporting actor, that they're all lead actors in the movie, and that you don't really have a supporting actor in the film, in my opinion. And I feel like everybody's performances are good enough to be like submitted for a lead Oscar role nomination. They're both like very hard for me, but I'm really Zendaya in that film, Team Tosh Duncan all day, every day.
That's one of the films I refuse to see. I cannot watch a dude get caught cold. That
no, you would think that that's what happens. And I was like, okay, I'm mentally preparing myself that I'm gonna see Zendaya's boobs, probably her vagine. And I'm just like, we're going to probably like overdo the sex. And it wasn't that. It didn't make me feel uncomfortable. It didn't make me feel weird. It didn't make me feel like, what the fuck am I watching? Is this like Bones and All? Because Bones and All, I literally couldn't stomach. I had to stop watching it. Like, I wanted to puke, because like, they don't ease you into the cannibalism. They just dive right in. And so I'm like, that's what I was like preparing myself for, is like that type of visualness. And it wasn't like that. It doesn't like force you. It's more of the story. And someone had said, see it 3 times, because each time you're going to see a new person as the villain of the movie. So like the first time I saw Josh O'Connor's character as the villain of the story, I'm going to wait until it comes on Prime, because I don't want to pay for it. But it's both close seconds. I feel like Zendaya's performance in Challengers is better than in Dune. And I feel like the Challengers, the way that it was delayed, was so they could get her nominated for an Oscar. And I think she will be nominated.
God.
I love that movie so much.
I just feel...
The music is hard to get into. You're like, oh, it's rave music. But then you're like, okay, it kind of grows on me.
Yeah, I think I'm still going to press a hard pass on that, watching that film. But in regards to the best film of the year so far, I definitely agree with you, Dune Part 2. I saw that film with my brother twice. At first, when the popcorn buckets came out, I was like, this is stupid. And then when I saw everyone else buying the popcorn buckets, I was like, well, I can't be the only one not getting it. So, yeah, I do have the glory hole bucket on my shelf.
I didn't get the bucket because I thought it was weird.
I did not eat out of it.
Every time I buy a bucket, I never eat out of it because I'm not like a huge popcorn fan. But it does. It sticks out to you. What performance in Dune like stuck out to you the most?
Definitely Timothée Chalamet. Mm-hmm. I have not seen a lot of his films other than Lady Bird and Little Women, but he was absolutely excellent, and I think that made me look at him as a leading man in Hollywood. And also, I don't think this one is talked about enough. I don't even know if you've seen it, but Bad Boys Ride or Die, I have that as number two in from the films I've seen this year. I thought that was excellent.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet. I still need to watch Timothée Chalamet in Wonka. I just couldn't get behind the whole Wonka and the whole musical part of it, just because like I just didn't feel like that movie should have been done, but that's just my opinion on it. I never really got the hype for him. I never really enjoyed his work. I just felt like there was something off about him. And then I saw Dune Part 2 and I'm like, okay, I get it now. I don't like that he's dating Kylie Jenner, but like, I get it now. Like, he's a good actor. But I'm not like, I don't think he's like the new Leonardo DiCaprio by any means. He still has a lot to prove and a lot to do.
As long as he stays away from underage women.
That's true. I don't think he has a problem with that. I just know Leonardo DiCaprio only gave him the advice to not ever play superheroes. If he'll actually do that, who knows? But you know what, Leo? We don't need you in the superhero world. You're fine where you are because you're just Leo, and we love Leo. I'm excited to see what they do in Dune Messiah. It might be the next film that the director makes, allegedly. So I'm excited for that and just seeing more Florence Pugh. I felt like the intro of her narrating, I can listen to her narrate all day.
And the arena scene with Austin Butler, that was freaking bone chilling. I love it so much.
Yes, I feel like he played a really good villain. I really love Austin Butler. That was a performance that stuck out to me the most. And then obviously Rebecca Ferguson. I just love her in literally everything she's in.
I think he's better at playing. He's still relatively new, but mm-hmm. I think he's better at playing the bad guy because he's the complete opposite in reality.
Oh my gosh, yes. And he's just so handsome. He just has that vibe about him that every time he walks onto the screen, he like owns that scene. It's like, yeah. Like she owned every single scene that woman was in.
Yeah, and he also crushed it in Bike Riders too.
He did. And the way he can act without even saying anything, that means he's hanging out with Florence Pugh, because Florence Pugh can act without saying a single word.
And I cannot wait to, I was watching, I can't remember, I was watching random YouTube videos last night, and an ad popped up, and it was for Andrew and Florence's movie. And at first I was going to skip it as soon as the time ran out so I could skip it. But I was like, well, now I can't skip it. I have to watch this, even though I've already seen it a couple of times before. The trailer is just so good. It has me excited for the film.
Exactly. And did you see the leak of the Thunderbolts trailer? Because I did. And I'm going to need a trilogy right freaking now.
Is it that good?
It is about. I'll send you a. If you got Twitter, I'll send you it on Twitter because I can't send the whole video because it's too long on Instagram.
Yes, I do have
It's
Twitter.
not like the best quality, but like, oh my gosh. A, I'm gonna sue because of Bucky's hair. I know he's a congressman now because and apparently he washes his arm in the dishwasher, which I always wondered how he washed it. So it makes sense because it sanitizes it. So I want to know if that's the new one or if that's the one Rocket takes. I got questions about the arm situation still, but like I'm already in love with their chemistry. I'm in love with Ghost's new suit, Taskmaster's new suit. I'm not even gonna call her Taskmaster. She's Antonia because she has a name and she looks fucking amazing.
I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I don't even like to think about stuff like that because then I have a thousand questions roaming in my head. Like,
Oh, I'll send it to you on Twitter. It's just so good. So many practical effects. There's an opening scene where they all meet and they're all fighting, and then Sentry's there, but his name is Bob. I think he picks up the Sentry belt buckle thingy, so we might see him in the suit.
what regarding Bucky's arm, he like okay, well, I mean, thanks a lot. Now it's on my mind now.
He was in the dishwasher? No, it's literally he takes it out of the dishwasher.
No, doesn't he have to charge that thing? Because
I don't think the charges. I think I have questions. I think no, because do they ever talk about how they like do things for like Black Panther's suit that's made out of vibranium? I don't think they ever did. I think it's just like has this energy. It's kind of like Captain America's shield, like it's just there.
Touche.
Yeah, and it's like attached to like his nerves or something, I would assume. I feel like they need to go into the medical part of it because I need to like understand like medically, scientifically how it works. But like, I feel like I'm excited for the chemistry. The fact that it took us this long to get it and that Florence Pugh was like, can somebody leak the trailer? I'm like, girl, yes. But we have it. I saved it. I can't wait for the film. Please release it in HD. I'm obsessed with Bob. And I really like that we're getting Ghost back and Antonia back. Just because like I feel like their characters are really mysterious. I don't think Antonia is a real Taskmaster. I think she's just like a version that Dreykov wanted to make because he saw the real Taskmaster and he's like, I'm gonna make my own. And that was just his version.
You're definitely gonna have to send me the
Oh
link
yeah.
to that trailer.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait. But yeah, that is episode 13 this week of the Midcasters. It was a lot of news. Remember, all this stuff is our opinions. It's alleged. We all read it from the materials that we got, like Hollywood Reporter and stuff like that. So don't get all butthurt, guys. but I'm your co-host, Jalen. You can find me at Lost in Life Translation on Tick of the Talk. Sandra Loves Movies on Letterboxd. Jalen Sanderson on Twitter. And Lost in Life Translation on Insta of the Gram. Craig, where can they find you?
On all socials, you can find me at Craig Junior 97, including Letterboxd as well.
Awesome. And that's episode 13. So come back next week for episode 13 again. I'm Jalen, joined by Craig. Bye-bye.